Blog Talk Radio.
Smoke News Radio Podcast. Welcome to Smoke News Radio 2020 with your host, Jason Brodsky.
Hello, thank you. You've tuned in to Smoke News Radio, episode 125. My name is Jason Brodsky. I'm your host, and let's get it going tonight. From thecannabisbusinesstimes.com, we have New Zealand government provides grant to medical cannabis cultivar to help accelerate industry. New Zealand's government is providing a $13 million grant to Puro, one of the country's largest organic medical cannabis cultivars, to help accelerate the nascent industry. The funding will help Puro develop production systems, support skills and training, explore contract growing, and identify pathways to market, according to a company press release. Puro Managing Director Tim Aurich said in the press release, the grant is a game changer and that will provide New Zealand patients with greater access to locally grown and manufactured medicine and pave the way for international export success. Being one of New Zealand's first medical cannabis companies has meant we've had to overcome some challenges. It hasn't been easy. This program will see us create an organic production handbook that will be invaluable for Puro and our industry. The grant will also support Puro in developing post-harvesting processing technology and build the IP required to produce premium organic cannabis flower to meet increasing domestic and global demand. Puro, founded in 2018 and harvested its first medical cannabis crop last year, according to the government press release. The funding will also allow Puro to develop unique cultivars and seed stock for New Zealand's medical cannabis industry, according to the company's announcement. Quote from Aldridge, our cultivation team are researching and developing the strains of medicinal cannabis best suited for New Zealand's unique climate. The grant will see the acceleration of a large genetic database of cultivars to support the New Zealand industry and differentiate our cannabis products in global markets. New Zealand Agriculture Commissioner Hon Damien O'Connor said that the grant could help the country's medical cannabis industry become as successful as its wine industry. Quoted, now is the perfect time to grow this high-value industry, and international demand for medicinal cannabis takes off while New Zealand is amid an export boom. O'Connor said in a public statement, this project will bring significant scale to this industry, providing domestically sourced medicinal cannabis for Kiwi patients in pain and exciting export opportunities in a cannabis growth market, providing further diversification of land use and export opportunities. The partnership between New Zealand's government and Puro is a $32 million program that will run from 2020 2022 to 2027 with the Ministry Primary Industries Sustainable Food and Fiber Futures contributing the $13 million grant and Puro contributing the remainder of the fund. The announcement of this scale industry development project is an exceptional example of government and business working together at a crucial time for our sector as we prepare for a significant export opportunity. Steve Wilson, quotes, chair of the New Zealand Medical Cannabis Council, said in a public statement, Puro operates at the forefront of organic and best practice cultivation. Its collaborative approach to develop and fast-track research programs will provide real and long-lasting benefits to all New Zealand cultivars, medicines, manufacturers, and as a result, the New Zealand economy.
Dun, 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 dun. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. Please enter your host PIN when finished.
To start your show now, press 1.
Since it appears you're calling back into a live show, we are reconnecting you now.
Thank you. You're listening to Smoke News Radio, where sometimes the power likes to do its thing. Next, we got from ScienceDaily.com, the Endocrine Society, babies exposed to cannabis in the womb may be at risk for obesity, high blood sugar, both CBD and THC put children at risk despite CBD being marketed as having health benefits. Cannabis use among pregnant women is on the rise and may be associated with negative health outcomes in children, according to a new study published in the Endocrine Society's Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism. A 2016 study in Colorado revealed that up to 22% of pregnant women had detectable levels of cannabinoids in their body. Women who use cannabis, both tetrahydrocannabinol and cannabidiol, during pregnancy could be putting their child at risk for low birth weight and behavioral problems. Exposure to cannabinoids may also increase the child's future risk of obesity and high blood sugar. Part of CBD's popularity is that it is marketing as being non-psychoactive and that consumers can reap benefits from the plant without a high. CBD is advertised as providing relief for anxiety, depression, and post-traumatic stress disorder. It is also marketed to promote sleep. Brianna Moore, PhD of the Colorado School of Public Health in Aurora, Colorado, quotes, we found that cannabis use during pregnancy was linked to increased fat mass percentage and fasting glucose levels in five-year-old children. We would encourage women to refrain from using cannabis while pregnant or breastfeeding to minimize adverse effects in the offspring. The researchers studied urine samples from 103 pregnant women, 15 of whom who had detectable levels of cannabinoids such as THC and CBD in their urine. These mothers' five-year-old children had higher fat mass and fasting glucose levels compared to children who were not exposed to cannabis during pregnancy. More quotes, more studies are needed to understand how exposure to different cannabinoids during pregnancy may impact the offspring. All right. National Institutes of Health. Very fun. Next, on Smoke News Radio, with your host, Jason Brodsky, from KCR.org, Action Kansas. Kansas researchers find that feeding hemp to cattle mellows the herd. A study done on Holsteins by Kansas State University found mixing feed with industrial hemp reduced stress levels in cattle. The researchers at Kansas State University said hemp could be a natural way to decrease stress-related respiratory infections and other ailments when cattle are being transported or weaned off their mothers. In Wichita, a new study suggests feeding cattle industrial hemp, a horticultural cousin of marijuana, reduces their stress levels and makes them lie down more. That could prove beneficial to ranchers because relaxed steers tend to be healthier. Researchers at Kansas State University said hemp could be a natural way to decrease stress-related respiratory infections and other ailments when cattle are being transported or weaned off their mothers. Mike Kleinertz, assistant professor of beef production medicine at Kansas State College of Veterinary Medicine, published the results of the study recently in Scientific Reports, quoted, "We might have a more natural way to reduce stress in cattle, and we're just starting to scratch the surface on some of the benefits." Kleinhein's study involved 16 Holstein steers. Over 2 weeks, half the steers consumed traditional feed and the other half ate a mixture of feed with industrial hemp. It's a cannabis variety containing the chemical compound CBD with lower levels of the psychoactive compound THC. CBD is a popular pain and anxiety relief remedy. Kleinhens and his team tracked the cattle's movements and also monitored their blood for cortisol, prostaglandins, which are biomarkers for stress, compared to the control group. The hemp munching steers spent more time lying down and had lower levels of stress hormones. The team also found that the hemp was absorbed but did not accumulate in the steer systems. Kleinhens quotes, "It was kind of an exploratory study that yielded some really interesting results. You usually don't go fishing and find stuff like that. Cattle that are more relaxed could benefit ranchers when it's time to wean them or move them to feedlots when close quarters stress sometimes leads to respiratory infections or other ailments. After the 2018 Farm Bill legalized hemp production in the United States, interest grew in hemp as an agricultural commodity, including as feed for animals. But the United States Food and Drug Administration approval would be required before hemp could be fed to livestock or pets. In 2020, Kansas State's team received a $200,000 research grant from the United States Department of Agriculture to analyze the safety of industrial hemp as cattle feed. Currently, growers dealing in the CBD oil market hire processors to extract the oil from hemp seeds or flowers. The process leaves behind large amounts of plant material with little value. If those byproducts, which contain trace amounts of CBD or THC, could be used to feed livestock, it would benefit cattle ranchers and keep waste out of landfills, quotes Kleinhens. Basically, it's the old cow recycle system, similar to the ethanol story, where cattle are fed distillers' grains from ethanol production. Follow-up studies will look at how cattle absorb CBD compounds and their potential effect on food products. Quoted, "We want to understand the whole timeline from when an animal last consumes hemp compounds to when it can safely enter the food chain and not have these compounds in the system." Susan Perez reports in Wichita. All right. Next on Smoke News Radio, with your host, Jason Rodger, we have from Healthline.com, using cannabis during pregnancy may increase risk of high blood sugar in children. Let's see, it's kind of a second view. It's kind of the exact same thing, actually. Okay, that's kind of the same story. Okay, next on Smoke News Radio, from pubmed.ncbi.ln. Sorry, so dyslexic. NLM.NIH.gov article 35245494. The association between current and cumulative cannabis use and heart rate, the coronary artery risk development in young adults, the CARDIA study. Background, Resting heart rate can predict cardiovascular disease. Heart rate increases with tobacco smoking, but its association with cannabis use is unclear. We studied the association between current and cumulative cannabis use and heart rate. The methods: we used data from the coronary artery risk development in young adults cardia study, a large prospective cohort of 5,115 black and white women and men, African American and Anglo-Saxon women and men, followed over 30 years. We explored the association between cannabis exposure and heart rate, adjusted for demographic factors, cardiovascular risk factors, alcohol and other illicit drug use, physical activity, beta blockers in a mixed longitudinal models censoring participants with cardiovascular disease pre-existing. The results, and this is an entire study, like, guys, this is like a 2-hour read if I read the study, by the way. So I'm not reading the study. This is just the quick, like, the cliff notes of the cliff notes. The results from the CARDIA participants contributed to 35,654 individual examinations over 30 years. At the year 30 examination, 471 of the 3,269, that's 14%, currently used cannabis. In multivariable adjusted models compared to no current use, using cannabis 5 times per month was associated with lower heart rate of negative 0.7 beats per minute at a 95% confidence interval of negative 1 to negative 0.3, and daily use with lower heart rate of negative 2.1 beats per minute at a at a 95% confidence interval of negative 3 to negative 1.3 overall P.001 something. Okay. Cumulative exposure to cannabis use was not associated with heart rate. Okay. Conclusion: recent current cannabis use was associated with lower resting heart rate. Findings appeared to be transient because past cumulative exposure to cannabis was not associated with heart rate. This adds to the growing body of evidence suggesting a lack of deleterious association of cannabis use at a level typical of the general population on surrogate outcomes of cardiovascular disease. Okay, basically, it was saying, five times a month, if you just only smoked 5 times a month, you would lose 0.7 beats per minute of your heartbeat. And daily use, 30 times a month, you would lose average of 2.1 beats per minute on your heart. So it's good, you know. I like smoking and exercising myself. That's just me. Some of y'all should try that. Okay, good y'all didn't know those things. Welcome to Smoke News Radio with your host, Jason Brodsky. Right here, episode 125. From EurekaAlert.org. Animal study shows safety of using CBD and THC with opioids. Combining marijuana compounds with opioids doesn't increase risk for addiction. New research indicates compounds derived from marijuana like delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol, THC, enhance the pain-relieving effects of opioids, while THC and cannabinol, CBD, do not enhance the abuse-related effects of opioids. Ongoing studies are examining the effects of THC and CBD on other problematic aspects of opioid use disorder, including withdrawal and relapse. These studies aim to validate marijuana-derived compounds as a safe, effective means to treat opioid use disorder. From Philadelphia, findings from a new animal study suggest that CBD and THC might be safe for use with opioid pain relievers. Although more studies are needed, these results suggest that these compounds might be a low-risk way to reduce the dose of opioids needed to relieve pain. Lawrence Carey, PhD, a postdoctoral fellow at the University of Texas Health Science Center, San Antonio, quotes, "There is intense interest in using medical marijuana in patients with chronic pain because compounds in marijuana, like CBD and THC, may produce pain relief themselves or enhance the pain-relieving effects of opioids. This means people could potentially use lower doses of opioids and still get relief from pain. Taking less pain medication could also lead to a lowered risk of addiction or physical dependence to opioids." The researchers found that CBD and THC may produce pain relief themselves. The researchers found that CBD and THC do not enhance the rewarding effects of opioids. This means that these compounds may not increase the risk for addiction when used in conjunction with opioids. Carey will present the new research at the American Society for Pharmacology and Experimental Therapeutics annual meeting during the Experimental Biology 2022 meeting, April 2nd to the 5th in Philadelphia. In the new study, the researchers gave rhesus monkeys the opportunity to choose a food reward or an injection of the opioid fentanyl. They then tested whether CBD, THCs, or mixtures containing both compounds affected the number of times the drugged up monkeys selected fentanyl over food. It's a horrible study. They found an injection. It's horrible. Do not do this to your monkeys. You find monkeys, do not feed them fentanyl. Okay, they then tested whether CBD, THC, or mixtures containing both compounds affected the number of times the monkeys selected fentanyl over food. They found that a wide range of doses of CBD or THC, both alone or in mixture, did not increase or decrease the number of times they selected fentanyl. Carey quotes, giving the animals the opportunity to choose between a drug injection and a food reward helped us to somewhat replicate choices of human drug user may face, such as whether to spend money on drugs or food. Having the option of responding for food is also useful for studying drugs like THC that produce sedative effects. It helps demonstrate the animal is reallocating behavior from drug to food choice instead of simply shutting down response for a drug due to sedation. The researchers are now conducting other studies to assess whether CBD and THC can decrease signs of opioid withdrawal and relapse. Carey quotes, a big reason why people continue to take opioids after they become addicted is the appearance of withdrawal symptoms. We are using what we learned from this study to determine whether these doses, which didn't alter choice for food or drug rewards, may help relieve opioid withdrawal or decrease relapse and drug-seeking behavior following periods of abstinence. The researchers caution that opioid use disorder is a complex disease. There are many factors to consider when developing a drug to treat it. Although the study indicates that THC and CBD do not increase the rewarding effects of opioids, they say that before applying these findings to people, it will be necessary to determine whether these treatments alter the pathological processes involved with opioid use and to better understand any risks that may be associated with their use. All right. Oh, man, that's so awesome. That's, you know, I mean, except for like drugged up fentanyl monkeys, you know, they're trying to, you know, show like, you know, marijuana like reduces opioid use. You know, there's a lot of people in states and other studies, and that's other articles. So thank you for listening to Smoke News Radio. Your host, Jason Brodsky, trying to give it to you the best he can without his opinions, just silly voices. Next, we got from Biomarket insights.com why the construction industry needs hemp and fungi. Bio-based construction materials are already on the market. What will it take to scale them? From 2020, the world can emit only 400 gigatons of carbon for a chance to stay within 1.5 degrees of warming. Maintaining the carbon budget will require a radical overhaul of how we make our buildings. Currently, manufacturing construction materials emits around 11% of global greenhouse gases per year globally. Around 5% of global greenhouse gases emissions come from cement alone and are set to produce 3.5 billion metric tons of it by 2050. The carbon intensity of the construction sector owes to its near total reliance on metal and mineral-based materials. By adopting bioalternatives to cement, steel, brick, and concrete, the industry could make massive sustainability savings because plants absorb atmospheric carbon as they grow. Components made from biomass are much more likely to be carbon neutral. Although wood has been the traditional plant-based construction material, it cannot address the sustainability needs of the industry alone. Timber forests fluctuate in their carbon storage capacity since felled trees take a long time to regrow. This lag between timber harvest and regrowth also makes it difficult to supply the amounts of biomass needed by the global industry without destroying natural ecosystems for new plantations. Timber is no longer the only option when it comes to organic building materials. However, insulation and structural components made from straw, hemp, and mycelium are now hitting the market. Unlike wood, these crops regenerate quickly, offering plentiful biofeedstocks and sustained levels of carbon storage. A 2019 study showed that hemp and straw can help achieve carbon negative buildings, something near impossible with clay bricks or concrete. Hemp insulation and building blocks. And switching to bio-based insulation is an easy route to low-carbon buildings. Over its entire life cycle, 1 kilo of bio-based insulation requires between 0.24 and 39.5 megajoules to manufacture. Compare this to 15.7 to 54 megajoules per kilo for mineral insulation and between 95 and 108 megajoules for oil-derived versions. So that was basically oil-derived is 100 and bioinsulation is half, which is like 0.25 to 40 megajoules of energy required to manufacture. bio-based insulation. Hemp wool is a leading bio-based insulation alternative. This material is made by blending hemp fibers with polyester, potato starch, or sodium carbonate to produce a lightweight fleece-like material that matches fiberglass or foam equivalents on performance. Because it contains few synthetic ingredients, it poses lower health risks than mineral or health-based or metal-based versions, which have been associated with skin and lung abnormalities. Hempitecture, a U.S. company that makes hemp wool that is 90% natural fiber, claims their products are safe to touch and handle without gloves. Hemp can also be used in walls, roofs, and floors in the form of hempcrete. Like concrete, hempcrete can be bought in prefab blocks or be molded on site. This biocomposite is created by blending hemp sheave, the woody core of the hemp block, with lime binder. It's hydrated lime and either hydraulic lime and Portland cement or pozzolanic binder like metakaolin. I don't know what that is. On average, hempcrete weighs an eighth of concrete, saving on transportation emissions. A 2021 study that tested a hempcrete wall for 8 months at high humidity found that hempcrete is insulating and mold resistant, highly suited to the wet climate of Northern Europe. France created a 380 square meter sports center near Paris made of the material, the country's first public hempcrete building. Many natural building companies now offer hempcrete, including Hempitecture, US-based American Noir, and UK company Hempcrete. The Belgian company Isohemp produces more than 1 million hempcrete blocks per year and claims that one pallet of their hempcrete blocks stores 100 kilograms of carbon dioxide. Hempcrete offers benefits beyond its carbon mitigation properties. Unlike conventional structural materials like brick or cement, it offers excellent natural insulation. This cuts back the need for additional heat-retaining fillers. The material also naturally regulates indoor air quality. Its pores collect water molecules until the water content of the material balances that of the surrounding air. Hemp-based building materials have been a focus of European R&D in sustainable hemp construction. In 2018, the EU-funded ISO Bio project came up with a new formulation for hempcrete, replacing the mineral lime binder with bio-based alternatives. The ISO Bio's 100% bio-based hempcrete has better thermal conductivity and strength than hemp line blends. Global greenhouse gas emissions are not the only problem with today's building materials. Recyclability is also an issue. At the end of its life, concrete is crushed and sent to the landfills. This linear model intensifies virgin resource extraction and carbon-intensive manufacturing to replace the lost material. Mycelium building blocks provide an answer. Mycelium is the long thread-like vegetative and root structure of the fungus. When a substrate like shredded bamboo or straw is inoculated with its spawn, the growing mycelium winds its way around the pieces to create a dense network of threads. To deactivate mycelium growth, the substance is heated to high temperatures. The texture and color of the final product resembles a block of hard cheese. Different cultivation methods produce blocks that vary in durability, stiffness, and density. The world's first large-scale fungi building was the Mushroom Tower Pavilion at the Museum of Modern Art in New York, installed in 2014. This 13-meter structure, made using mushroom and corn stalk waste, was built to showcase the possibilities of the material. Within 6 weeks, the bricks were returned to high-quality soil for the local gardens. So it's a temporary structure, okay. Lightweight, naturally fire-resistant, and free of the toxic, volatile compounds that emanate from some treated timber, this fungal block is an exciting new candidate for organic construction. In addition, the carbon savings are immense, producing a 1 meter cubed block of mycelium-based material releases 31 kilograms of carbon CO compared to 410 kilograms for the same amount of concrete containing 14% cement. Under stable climate conditions, these blocks can retain their integrity for 20 years. However, under normal conditions, the material naturally decomposes in 60 days. This is because the water resistance of mycelium decreases rapidly. This characteristic makes mycelium suited to temporary structures rather than heavy construction. Mycelium could find its niche in the events sector, allowing accommodation and venue space to be built and dismantled in a short period. Most mycelium production occurs at a small scale. The large-scale producers today are the New York-based startup Ecovative, the first commercial producer of mycelium construction materials. Their fully automated lab creates 215 meter squared mycelium-based materials per hour. Vital research into how cultivation methods can influence the properties of mycelium is being conducted at the Center of Expertise Bio-Based Economy. there, they are focusing on ways to improve the strength, insulating capacity, and crucially, the moisture resistance of fungi building blocks. 1.51 million meters squared worth of new buildings are expected in Europe alone by 2050. Yet the challenge of scaling sustainable bioalternatives to meet this demand is immense. The higher cost of bio-based building materials is the major factor limiting their uptake. To solve this, companies need to create products from livestock that is widely available locally. The Dutch bioconstruction company Holland Heltlin has identified enough material from horticultural waste streams to scale without destroying natural habitats. Selecting land-efficient biomass is essential so that cultivating feedstock for the construction industry does not compete with agriculture. This means that biomaterials that will scale in one region or country may not in another. For example, hemp sheave is a byproduct created when hemp oil is extracted. Legal limits on hemp cultivation mean that currently Europe has only 1% of total land that would be needed to comfortably supply the construction sector. France may be an exception to this, coming third in terms of worldwide hemp cultivation. In other major hemp-producing nations like Canada, China, and USA, there is a huge potential for a non-land-intensive biomaterials sector. Emphasizing the full benefits of bio is also key. In 2021, a research paper on scaling bio-based circular construction in the UK found that industry respondents who had switched to bio-based materials dramatically reduced their building maintenance costs. One reported that a hempcrete building costs two-thirds less to run than a traditional building. Another reported that a warehouse built with sustainable materials saved six figures in energy costs, shifting the way businesses think about financial risk is an important determinant of whether bio-based materials can become a wide-scale solution to energy transition. Customers who adopt bio-based materials are quickly dispelled of the notion that they cannot perform as well as conventional materials. However, overcoming mainstream perceptions about physical performance remains a major obstacle to increasing demand. There needs to be a greater push on educating the industry about advances in biomaterials engineering and making them aware of the options available on the market. The bio-based construction industry must also underline its importance in national net zero policies at every turn. If politicians want to build 1 million new houses in the next 10 years and stay within the 1.5 degrees of the Paris Agreement, they have to do it right the first time and use the right materials. Quotes Sandra Knapp of Holland Huitland, a bio-based construction materials company. Obtaining government contracts to build social housing is a crucial way to boost demand and will kickstart scaling. Holland Huitland has recently reviewed funding from the Built by Nature Accelerator Fund to develop bio-based social housing and conduct value assessments on buildings with bio, the first successful green social housing project would go a long way to proving that bio-based buildings can simultaneously meet economic and sustainability challenges. Fantastic. Thank you, everybody. You're listening to Smoke News Radio with your host, Jason Brodsky. Let's take a look at this right here. Oh, of course, I'm not online for some reason. Yay. That's always the best part. You know. Smoke News Radio. Smoke News Radio. Trying to keep strong internet signal. Even though Google Voice says you're on, this other thing might not say that you are. There we go. It says I am. Okay. You guys have a wonderful night tonight. And we'll let Jack Johnson take it away. My name is Jason Brodsky. I've been your host. And Jack Johnson plays the guitar way better than me. And he's got a really happy song. Yes. Here you go.
A billion people died on the news tonight, but not so many cried at the devil's sight. Well, Mama said, it's just make-believe. You can't believe everything you see. So baby, close your eyes to the lullabies on the news tonight. Who's the one to decide that it would be alright to put the music behind the Mama said, you can't believe everything you hear. The diegetic world is so unclear. So baby, close your ears on the news tonight. On the news tonight. The unobtrusive tones on the news tonight. Mama said, why don't the newscasters cry when they read about people who die? At least they could be decent enough to put just a tear in their eye. But Mama said, it's just make-believe. Can't believe everything you see. So baby, close your eyes to the lullabies on the news tonight.
Thank you for using Blog Talk Radio. Goodbye.